Welcome back to my podcast with Keith Allen and Scott Allen of St James's Place. In the first part, we discuss various matters relating to finance, the law, what Keith and Scott do. And in this one, we're going to be discussing how they work with solicitors, the role of a financial advisor today, and just general international politics and international issues that may affect financial investment.
As far as I'm concerned, the power is moving from the west to the east. It's so blatantly obvious, and I can show you maps and everything else. And when we have our seminars in a couple of weeks' time, I've got some slides that will blow you away on it, how much the power is moving. The consequences of that is that you've got to plan now, because you've got IT, which is reducing employment for white-collar workers as well as blue-collar workers, okay? It's reducing that. It's not paying the taxes to the government that has to pay the benefits to look after everybody. So, you know, we're in a really challenging position. We've got Trump, who wants to be re-elected, but God almighty, what's the rest of the world going to survive on? Trump doesn't affect America. Congress is Democrat. He can't get anything through in America. The only impact that Trump has is international. With us, we get affected more than Americans do by Trump. If he gets re-elected for another 4 years, what's he going to do? You've got Brexit. Everybody's been swayed by words, and the actions may not turn out quite the same. You've got international affairs. Europe is in a mess. Asia is in a mess. So, you know, really, I think that it's vitally important, if you have any intelligence, sit down and try and work your way through what's coming.
Yeah, I agree.
Because to do nothing is not an option.
So, in terms of that then, are you suggesting that estate planning for the baby boomers is a big market area for finance now?
Absolutely. The thing is that, I tell you what you've got to do, is you've got to plan where you're going to be in 10 years' time. How old are you?
39.
10 years' time is 49. Okay, they're not even 50. We're all living longer.
We're all living longer. If I'm alive in 10 years with my hedonistic lifestyle, I'll be happy.
So the thing is that whilst you're doing well, you should be tucking something away for the future, because that future may not be as rosy.
Yeah,
seriously.
That's true, yeah.
All of us, and most people nowadays are totally in for instant gratification. They get their money today, they spend it today. They don't save. We're not a saving group.
And in addition to that, you've got a very strong chance of living to 100 these days.
Yeah.
And even now, without living to 100 today, the majority of people run out of money 10 years before they die. That's today, without living to 100.
The cost of long-term care is expensive.
Yeah, okay, I didn't know that. Most people then run out of money 10 years before they die.
Yep.
You join us for Soul Eagles. Doom and Gloom podcast.
touch on the baby boomers and the wealth that they have. Look at you, Keith, you're just in the baby boomer bracket, I believe. They had it good. I asked my dad last week what was his first house that he bought, and it was 47 Oakleaf Drive in Polegate, for those of you that are local. It was 1968, and he paid £4,500 for it. Now, I looked on Zoopla. That house sold in 2000 for £90,000. So that's gone up in value 20 times in 32 years.
Yeah.
If you move on 32 years from 2000 and times 90,000 by 20 again, you've got 1.8 million. Now, that takes us 32 years, takes us to 12 years from now, so not long. Is that house going to be worth 1.8 million? Now, if you're local, you'll know that it's not.
No.
Zoopla will estimate it to be valued at 280,000 today. But what that demonstrates is the growth in value of property that the baby boomers had and have benefited from. It also illustrates the difficulty of getting onto the property market today. And you can't rely necessarily on the growth of that property medium to long term. So you do need to consider things and look at alternative arrangements.
Can I ask you something? Because I've thought about this before, right? Because obviously that baby boomer generation, you're right, they did have it off. They did.
I mean, I said all the benefits.
But they didn't know it at the time. some of them may have done, but you just live your life, and it's only looking back you go, that actually, yeah, I had a lot of money then.
But what I'm saying,
one of the things that I would suggest is that being that group is that our parents, you know, we'd come off the back of the Second World War, etc., etc. We didn't expect the benefits in the society that we currently live in. We don't always realise just how fortunate we are now.
Okay. Yeah. Two generations from now, people will say, oh, it was really good in the noughties.
Exactly.
2020 was it? Oh, of course
exactly,
they do.
Exactly. But you know, you have to take advantage of that and make your own luck as well.
You do, but I've got a question here, and this I've thought about this before, right? So this baby boomer generation, generally speaking here, the financial capital that they've had to invest has been based primarily on property rises and the increase in property rises in a particular period. I would say probably 80s, 90s. That was the best period. I mean, property's gone up.
Arguably.
So as a country, the UK, we benefited from all these people having money to go and do other things, buy this, buy that, blah, 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 blah. But it's all based on property prices increasing exponentially.
Which is no longer happening.
It's no longer happening. So why are we so badly... why is our economy so badly fixated on property when actually we need to be fixated on things that are more tangible, like manufacturing, like industry? We're a service industry now. We're insurance, banking, legal and finance. That's what the UK does.
Which is quite good, because manufacturing can be done cheaper elsewhere.
It can be. I agree with that. But at some point, China's manufacturing costs and its base are going to increase, because
they have got... That's why it's going to Africa.
It's then going to go to Africa. And from Africa, and then, you know, but you can't just keep... Everyone's going to have to keep... Yeah. So what I'm saying is, are we badly equipped as a nation now because of the millennials and Generation X not having the same exponential growth in property rises?
It's not just property growth, it's generational income growth, because income growth has arguably stopped and in many cases is in reverse. So you've got the lack of property growth in prices and you've got the income growth which has stopped.
Can I introduce something which I think you both missed as an observer of this? We, the baby boomers, benefited from our personal home rising in value.
Mm-hmm.
What you, as a sector, have benefited from, maybe not you personally, but a big sector, was that people that got into the concept that property was a good deal went for the buy-to-let market. Now, the government saw that problem, because people's normal buy-to-let is the first-time buyers area, the one- or two-bedroom flat, etc. Now, everybody buying those with a buy-to-let were buying them on a mortgage, which they perceived that the rent would then cover. And so they bought the next property with the rent covering. And so I've now bumped into quite a number of people that have got 20 or 30 buy-to-let properties. So the property market has been there for the millennials or just before, and they've milked it on the buy-to-let market. But that has now illustrated to me one enormous challenge. Because guess what? The regulator... Bless the regulator. He thought he was doing the right thing, because he challenged those people that went and got those mortgages, invariably ended up going to the banks. The banks lent the money. But the conditional in the old time, old school, was that they demanded you took out life insurance to cover that loan in case something happened to you, to protect you, your family, and the lender. The regulator says that's unfair, because you're not giving them an open market option. You are charging them more than what they would have to pay if they went to the open market. So they've brought in a rule and regulation that if you're the lender, you cannot stipulate that your loan is subject to them taking out the cover protection. So guess what? They've got the loan, they've gone off, and I'm talking to people who now have millions of pounds worth of properties and no cover, because they weren't forced to buy it. And why would they buy it? It costs money. No, get the understanding. It's protection. Mm. Now I'm seeing people that are in their mid-60s who have got all this liability. If they die, those properties are not paid off by the insurance. It means that they've got to start selling these properties whilst they're down in value, and they may be lower value than what their loan is. And then they've got liabilities of selling them, and the family knows nothing about what's going on.
Yeah.
And the exposure in the current marketplace to people in the buy-to-let market is enormous.
Keith, that's my point. What I'm asking you, both of you as financial advisors, is we're fixated on property. These people were fixated on property. And now we're in a downturn. Property prices went up 1.6% last year. Right.
Not just a downturn.
But what I'm saying what do we do as a nation if the economy was based, and I mean, I've always had an issue with Finkelstein, neoliberal capitalism, and the concept of exponential GDP growth, because since the 70s all we've ever done is we need exponential GDP growth, 3% a year. 3% a year in something like 22 years doubles your economic base, which means you use twice as many bits of paper, twice as many animals, twice as many, what I'm saying is all of this was possible in the UK in particular, maybe not mainland Europe because they're not fixated on property like we are. United States was to a certain extent, which is why the subprime mortgage collapse affected the world so badly, because people were doing the same thing. How do we go from this fixation on property, which is no longer an exponential growth, in areas in fact it's gone down, we can't keep relying on London prices anymore, going up and up and up. The Candy Brothers.
Why has it gone down? Why has it gone down? No, you've got to look at the politics.
My question is this. How do we move our economic base away from property growth? Because property growth creates jobs for builders. By the government talking about. But what I'm saying, where do we go? What's the other option?
Right, okay. Now, the problem is getting at the problem now. Because what the government did, if you go back to the Cameron-Osborne election of 2015, and they brought in a fixed 5-year period, okay? And the concept was the first year was to hit the property hard, so that they had to get back to getting the buy-to-lets out of the market. So they'd taken away the tax relief on the
interest. Yeah, yeah.
They increased the stamp duty on buy-to-lets, etc.
Unless you're a limited company, the interest still applies. But anyway,
okay. So the point is, if you're still where you were in 2015 and haven't taken any advice or looked at the problem, you are in a problem.
No, I get
that. And what happens as of April this year, if you sell your property and you have made a gain, you've got to pay your capital gains tax liability within 30 days, whereas it used to be a year plus. So the thing is, government has brought pressure on this area.
But my point is, what are they trying to achieve by that? I can understand they're trying to get liquidity in the market for first-time buyers and younger people getting on a property market and make the property prices come down a bit. But in terms of the country and the growth and
everything, we've got to get our heads away from the concept that you said. You buy property, it's guaranteed.
What's the alternative? Where are they going into?
Okay, you've got to have a mixed economy.
Where's your magic?
You've got to have a mixed economy.
Right, okay.
So you've got to have a property because you've got to live in something. There's no point in paying the rent for that. You've got to have some cash because you never know when you need cash, which is your emotive money. You've got to have investments. You've got to spread your investments. You've got to have some investments external to the UK. Because the UK may not quite work out post Brexit, so
which comes back to the
you've got to start
forest.
To look and plan.
But what my question is: we're moving away from property. Forget property.
Yep.
Where's the investments? Where are we going into? Are we going to stocks and shares? Are we going into Far Eastern investments? Are we going into cryptocurrencies? What's the alternative to property growth?
It's such a fascinating area.
That's why I'm asking.
Such a fascinating area because, just look at the most recent history. We talk about liquidity. There's now currently something ranging between $13 and $17 trillion in negative earning accounts less than zero. You actually have to pay to leave your money on deposit. A good example of this is the German government. If you want to lend money to the German government for the next 10 years, you have to pay them 0.5% per year for the enjoyment of.
But then...
So brilliant. So if you look around, you've got deposits. You go to your local bank or building society. What's the rate you're going to be getting? Let's assume the majority of them are going to be 1% or less. What's the rate of inflation? 2% in this country. Everyone's aiming for 2%. So you have a guarantee at present that all money on deposit is losing money. Mm. And you said you've got to keep it going at 3% for
GDP,
20
yeah,
years.
Yeah.
So it's not working. So deposit is struggling. Property, we've just discussed property, that's struggling. The only market area currently that's been going up has been the equity market. Now, that's good and it's likely to continue for another while. So the simple reason in the UK and in Europe is that you've got Trump coming up for election. He's going to do his best to keep that market up. Brexit, it wants to go forward. One of the likeliest ideas is that the more it reduces our currency, it'll push up demand because we'll be cheaper than other countries. But so if you've got assets external to the country, they will go up just simply on currency benefits. So if you look around, it's a challenge at present. And I think you've got to be able to be on top of it so that you can move around according to what's happening. You cannot just sit on your backside and expect the life to look after you.
It does seem like it's it's a very difficult place for people who are on lower middle incomes,
exactly.
who have got a job, say,
absolutely.
I'm just talking about very, you know, they're just happy to come to work, get their £22,000 a year, go home, spend time. That it seems to me, unfortunately, and it's sad, but that those people there are in the firing line. People with money are always going to be fine. People with assets are always going to find a way. But those people... If, as you say, technology is taken away, and it's true, they're taking away blue and white collar workers. They're kind of like a light blue kind of worker, aren't they? They're lower income, but they're in the white collar market. You know, secretaries and what. You know, it just seems to me that's the market that's going to be hit the most, and that's hard.
And going back to property again, briefly, we're coming to a time now where you've got people who are coming to their 60s who have relied upon their property growth and maybe don't have other investments or indeed haven't paid into a pension. And what are we doing now? What are we seeing a big upturn in, which you mentioned to me a week or so ago? What's your conveyancing team doing?
Equity release. Massive amount of equity release.
And if they're doing that, they're taking that money out to see them through their final days. But once they've got that money...
To cover that 10 years of shortfall.
What are they actually doing with it? Is it instant gratification, or are they investing it to move forward? Again, it's another area of need.
Seems to me, if I'm going to be honest, there's too many people on the planet as a whole. Everything's pointed towards... Everything we've talked about is just, there's so many people... That it's just everything's becoming a jungle.
Can I try to explain it as too many people, as basically as I can understand it? A lot of people were somewhat surprised that Trump was elected. But what he did was he appealed to the masses who were supposed to be left behind, that weren't benefiting from this and that. And it's very easy if you've lost your job. A politician has said it's immigration that's caused it, foreigners, they've taken their jobs. It's all easy. Okay. But lots of people now try to analyse what went on in America as they try to analyse what's gone on in the UK with Brexit. And this is what, from the amount that I've read, what they're saying in America was that there is 1% the elite in America that own over 40% of the assets. Mm. 90% of Americans own, as a total, own less than 40%. Now, in very basic arithmetic, that leaves 10% of the population owning 20%.
That's right, yeah.
Okay? Now, if you look at that, I only understand easy maths.
Just for a moment, it's 9%. Keith's maths.
I was rounding it up. Okay. He's looking for growth already.
Okay, 9% over 20%. Okay. But what that illustrates to me, that in America, there is a small group of people who have something. They don't have the top, the 1%. They've got something. They want to hang on to it. They want to try to grow it. They're interested in what's going on around themselves, etc. They are the people, would you believe, that financial advisors, wealth managers talk to. In this country, the FCA ran a thing 18 months ago, and they found that their survey came out that 8 to 9% in the UK, only 8 or 9% have ever taken financial advice. So that means, I think, very similarly, there's 90% of the population here, if they've got a job and they're fortunate, who go to work, go home, watch the TV, go to bed, get up, go to work, and are not overly interested.
They're not.
Because they just assume life's going to continue as it is. Well, tomorrow might be coming a bit quicker than they realise. And so therefore, we appeal to that 8, 9, 10%. People who are interested in trying to work out how they can survive going forward. And that's the type of people like yourself. You know, you're half intelligent, aren't you? Now, have you done all the right planning? I doubt it, because nobody ever has done it.
I don't know about the half intelligent bit. I've done some stupid stuff in my time, I can tell you
that. We all have. And all I tell you, it's much easier being divorced from it and not being emotionally involved in your personal affairs, as you are, to advise you. The one that is most difficult to make those decisions is you.
That's right.
And that's why we all need a bit of a helping hand.
That group I always look at as the people that are looking over their shoulder and ahead at the same time.
Absolutely.
I don't want to end up in that.
Correct.
The 40% that own
that's the half intelligent.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to being part of the 1%. And it's always been that kind of person. So look, let's moving on to the next point. What would you say is the role of, I mean, we've touched on this, but what's the role of a financial advisor today? Or, sorry, wealth management advisor? That word is dirty, though, don't you think? Like, as a humanist, wealth. It's almost like, you know, you just have wealth. It's at the consequence of somebody else not having wealth.
If you've got it, you have advice.
Yeah, okay.
And if you want it, you've got to take advice.
That's true. So what's your role today? We're 2020. The world started off with a bang already.
It's to build a relationship with somebody that trusts you.
Yeah.
Because if you work together, you can achieve. Now, I know an awful lot over the years, but I don't know everything. Now, this is really where I think the combination going forward of having a good wealth manager who will coordinate in many respects all the legal advice, all the accountancy, all the tax. So you need to have good accountants, good lawyers, good wealth managers, all working together on behalf of the individual. So the individual ends up with the best of all. And no, up until now, a lot of the occasions, qualified people are competing with each other, when the reality is that they should be working jointly for the benefit of their joint clients.
So in that, it
has to be built up through trust.
It does, but you know, okay, that's a good point, but how, not the trust bit, but you know, you work in a holistic way. How do you work with solicitors and lawyers? I mean, just to clarify here, solicitors are people that are regulated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority, and on the role of Solicitors of England and Wales, the Master of the Rolls has allowed you to become a solicitor, and you've done all your solicitor qualifications. That's a degree, that's the LPC, Legal Practice Course, and you've done a 2-year training at a firm. Just to make it clarify that, because there's people always ask me what's the difference between a solicitor and a lawyer. A lawyer is an American term, and it basically means anyone that provides law advice, legal advice. So anyone who, technically, I guess if someone set up a shop just doing wills, they can call themselves a lawyer. So solicitor is the benchmark of excellence. I'm just saying that if anyone is actually listening to this podcast. So how do you work with solicitors?
Look, the point is that if I'm talking to somebody and they're running a business, and I'm talking about how they pass it on, Now, invariably, they should have share issues. They should be, if they're in partnership with people, they should have cross-party cover, etc. All of these things invariably need some legal advice on how you tie these things up properly. Equally, they will need accountancy so that if something happens to some of them, somebody, you know, you've got a partnership of three, and one dies, and the sleeping partner's going to become the wife. It's had no interest. That's got to be dealt with, both from the accountancy point of view, the legal point of view, and the management of the wealth going forward.
Mm.
So, you know, they're really easy areas. Then you've got people that want to roll over. So if you're making profits, passing wealth on is essential to do whilst you're still able to. And you've got 7-year periods of being able to gift at present.
And that's the next area, really, of wealth management, is passing on the money. The generation of the baby boomers now, you're looking at tax-efficient ways of passing it on.
And invariably, the easiest way to pass it on is to give it out of your estate, but not in the hands of the beneficiary.
He's going to give it to me then.
So you put it into a trust and things like that. So guess who is good at writing up trust and getting the legal bits? Because that trust now is going to go with their will, etc. So now the dovetailing of it all, once you start, it all has a natural growth to it.
What do you look for in solicitors you work with? Obviously, trust. You work with us as well. Trust is the most important aspect. But what else? I mean, you know.
What does trust is trust? Trust is built on the fact that you believe somebody can do the job that they say they're going to do. That they're not trying to do it for the benefit of themselves, because your benefit will come if the client does well.
That's right.
Because if the client does well, he'll refer you to other clients, etc., etc. So if you're in this for a long game, which I can illustrate, is do the best job. And if you do the best job, that will create trust.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. That's the most important aspect of whatever job you
do. Is it a short demand? Is it a short service at present, trust?
It's
nobody trusts the banks. Nobody trusts the insurance companies.
I touched on this earlier. There's also a difficulty in the plumber A, plumber B, plumber C scenario that I gave you. You know, invariably what happens is plumber A, because he's the cheapest, gets bombarded with work. And then what happens is, I get this, I go to the pub and people come up to me and go, oh, I'm using so-and-so for my conveyancing and it's awful, I can't get hold of them, I can't do this. And then I just turn around to him and say, well, did you go on price? Yes, I did go on price. Therefore, your trust with that person is based only on money, not on service or quality or efficiency or speed.
But that's the point. You get what you pay for.
You
do. You've lost that.
But then they're not going to use a solicitor for 5 years until they sell their house or get what something happens to them. And in 5 years' time, they're going to forget that, not go to that firm, but go on price again. So we do need a market recalibration.
I spoke just a little earlier. Inheritance tax bill is a good example.
Yeah.
Okay, look at that. It says that in the 18-19 tax year, which is the most immediate one, we're still in the current one, the IHT receipts was £5.4 billion. And a year on year, that was an increase of £164 million. Now, that is tax being paid. That is after you've had all your allowances. Bearing in mind you've got a personal nil rate band of 325 each. So as a couple, that's 650. Then you've got your property bit allowance up to the 2 million of 150,000. So you're up to 950,000 before you should be liable for the tax.
Mm.
So this is tax on people who've got the estate above that.
Mm-hmm.
And an awful lot of that is because they need to plan. Because what is IHT? When you're at work, you pay income tax. When you go out and spend, you pay VAT tax. The 40% IHT is on what's left after that.
Amazing, isn't it? Where the hell does the money go?
Arguably, that those figures there, an element of that would be from people who haven't planned, have been caught out.
Yeah, no, that's true, I know.
And the bulk of that is in property.
Yes.
Now, I can show you the report of probate for the year before last, and of estates that were liable for tax, okay, that are up to $500,000, the vast percentage is in property and cash. Very little in securities, investments. You go up to the $1 million and $2 million, as a proportion, the percentage in property and cash is much lower, and the highest proportion is in equities.
Mm.
Because when you've got money, guess what? It's an old saying, it's still as true today as ever. Money makes money. It's so much easier. The first million, they say, is always the most difficult. It gets progressively easier the more you have. Sad, isn't it?
Wow. Right, so in order to, I mean, we've talked for almost an hour now, so let's, we're going to wrap this up by saying and asking, what are your plans for 2020? How are we going to approach what we've discussed? What are we going to do?
Plans for 2020 involve a number of seminars, both with yourself, So Legal, planning one, as you know, for late March to coincide with the end of the tax year, start of the new tax year. Keith and I have also been invited by St Wilfrid Local Hospice to do a number of seminars throughout this year, which will be based upon inheritance tax and estate planning. So that could be very important for us. In line with that, to sort of add to our expertise, we're both taking the STEP certificate in trust and estate planning, just to enhance our skills. So our focus this year is really projecting our expertise through these seminars with yourself and St Wilfrid's, and looking at the area of estate planning.
So just to confirm, I mean, we've got, to wrap this up, we've got a seminar in February in Hove, and then we're doing a seminar with St James's Place in London, Eastbourne and Brighton in March, April time, which more details will be on our website and sent out on the newsletters that we send out if you're interested. If you wanted to contact Keith and Scott, then please just come through myself, hovc@solegal.co.uk. You can get my email and contact details on the website, www.solegal.co.uk. And I just want to thank Keith and Scott again for coming in.
Thank you.
It's been a really interesting seminar. It's never, ever a bore having Keith here. He is one of the most interesting people I've ever met. How he's single, I don't know. I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Keith. No, it's been a real joy. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate
that.
Thank you.
Hummel.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank you for the opportunity of talking. I also have to tell you, I'm very frustrated.
Why is that?
We haven't got on to talk about the more international.
Oh, that's a whole other podcast. And we'll do that. You and I will do that over a beer after this. Lovely.
Because the world is in an incredibly interesting place, and one can't sit and wait for it to happen.
No, absolutely.
Be part of it.
Absolutely. I've got my dad, I've got my hands on my nose here, just constantly messaging me saying, buy gold, buy gold, buy gold. Gold has gone up 25% in the 2.5 months. He keeps telling me to buy gold, and I keep telling him, where the hell do I buy gold? Because it's not like you can just go and go, hey, can I buy some gold? And plus, in the UK, gold is VAT-able, so you've got to pay VAT. So they close that down as well. So thank you anyway, Keith. Thanks, Scott. And real pleasure to see you again. And thanks, then. Hello, you lovely people. Just to note that this is a podcast and does not constitute legal advice. Should you require any specific legal advice based on anything, then please contact your solicitor, or even better, us, and we can advise you fully.